everyone. It is April 25th, and today we were supposed to have Molly Jongfast on. She's an author, and she's a hilarious Twitter celebrity as well. But my podcast partner, Stephanie, had to do some last-minute traveling. And so today we were very fortunate because I've been wanting to have this woman on for a while. Her name is Leah Torres. She's a... actually, I'm going to read what... She is an OBGYN who moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, where she completed a family planning fellowship. That is, she's become highly trained in abortion care even after 20 weeks. And she provides full-spectrum women's health care from infertility to contraception, from puberty to menopause. I know all about that. Since being in Utah, Dr. Torres has had to face many, as you can imagine, political battles in order to ensure her patients have access to the safe abortion care they need and deserve. So I'm really excited to talk to her today. Bob Seska's here, and we're both going to just pick her brain. So welcome, Leah. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kimberly. It's great to be here. Nice to meet you, Bob.
Oh, nice to meet you too, Leah.
You know, I started my whole online activism in 2012, and it was primarily because, well, Rush Limbaugh called Sandra Flick a slut, but that all started because they were trying to defund Planned Parenthood. And the war on women was something that caught my eye, even though I had been political before. I was always a pro-choice liberal, but it wasn't something that I wore on my sleeve. It wasn't something that I would run around screaming that I'm a feminist. But when I saw the right wing attacking Planned Parenthood, attacking women, suggesting that we should put aspirin between our legs and that, you know, the body has a whole thing, a whole way of shutting those rape...
Yeah.
Shutting that whole thing down.
And all that, it's like, I'm now totally an activist and I wear it on my sleeve and I announce it. So,
by the way, you know excellent. Who ran Todd Akin's campaign?
Who?
Kellyanne Conway.
Oh my God. Well, that's just not surprising.
Of course she did.
Well, that's when I became aware of you because I run some feminist Facebook pages and I would see memes or articles either, you know, quoting you or about you. And so I followed you on Twitter, and I always love how you handle yourself because I don't know how you do it because I am so sarcastic. And even though there are times that I bite my tongue and I try to be fair and measured, I don't always succeed. But it seems that you always succeed. You're always being hit with some judgmental jerk and they think they've got you on something. And you always come back with like this really... measured, smart, and informed answer, and it's just you're freaking badass.
It's amazing what it's amazing when experts talk about things.
Yeah, really, exactly.
They come off like experts.
Oh my goodness, you guys are too much. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. So practice makes perfect, right? So I've been doing this for a few years, and as you know, the arguments against pregnant people having the ability to decide what happens to their bodies and their pregnancies haven't really changed much over centuries. We used to, back in ancient times, see abortion as another way to have a family or not have a family.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was a very well accepted thing. It wasn't always safe, of course. We didn't have the modern science and medical technology that we have today. But it wasn't always seen as this horrible, sinful thing. And again, the arguments just haven't changed. So day to day, I hear the same things in different permutations, and mm-hmm. I just respond very similarly.
Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to bring up is the whole idea of regret. I mean, I wrote a book called Peyton's Choice, which focuses on a teenage girl. It doesn't focus on abortion really until maybe the last third of the book. The first part of the book is just, you know, she was young. She fell in love for the first time. She had sex for the first time. Her boyfriend was a good guy, but sometimes he was a jerk. So there were just, you know, different issues that came along. And then all of a sudden she finds herself pregnant and she doesn't want to be a mother. And I really wanted to write a book or at least give a point of view. And I am kind of giving something away here with my book, but is that you know, I hear the argument that, oh, well, you know, if I were to get pregnant and have an abortion, I would regret it for the rest of my life. I'd always look back and wonder, you know, my kid would be this, my kid would be that. And I don't think that's necessarily the way. I wanted to have somebody, I wanted to focus on somebody who had an abortion and it wasn't something that was so terrible and so filled with regret. Now, granted, the procedure itself is not fun, just as like who wants to go in for a root canal? Who wants to go in to get, you know, well, now I'm so...
An appendix taken out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nothing.
I had one in mind, and I'm really great at forgetting what I want to say when I say it. But,
knee replacement, hip replacement.
Yeah, anything, really. Just
open
any
heart
procedure.
Surgery. Yeah.
Like, none of those procedures are fun. But as far as women regretting it or coming into a doctor's office and feeling really upset about it, I mean, what's your experience? Can you tell us about, you know, what you've seen out there?
Well, I can tell you that every experience is as individual as people are. You can't just say that abortion will cause regrets much any more than you can say a child will cause happiness.
Right.
It's not that simple. Everybody's experience with pregnancy, with or without a supportive partner, with or without consensual sex, with or without, like, all of these factors play at somebody's decision whether or not to remain pregnant if they are pregnant and don't want to be. So my experience is doing the best I can to make sure that if somebody comes in and says, I want an abortion, that A, they understand the risks, B, they understand the risks and options of continuing the pregnancy, and C, that it's their decision, that they're not being coerced, that they're not being pressured, and that it's actually something that they want to do themselves. So it gets super complicated, but I think that if we just treat people as people, mm-hmm. just like we do in every other aspect of healthcare or every other aspect of society, it becomes very much a gray area of what will the future bring? No one knows. Hopefully that you make a decision, whatever that decision is regarding having a root canal, regarding having a heart transplant. You make those decisions based on the information that you have at the time. Mm-hmm. That information can change in the future. And you may look back with regret, but really if you look at the historical time point in which you were, regret shouldn't even be a thing. It can be, but it shouldn't if you accept that you were doing what was best given the information you had at the time.
Yes. Absolutely. I and you know, it's also been my experience that in talking to men, pro-choice men, I think that I found so many of them feel like it's such a sad choice to make, where again, it's not a choice that I want to be forced to make. I mean, it's, put it to you this way. When I was younger, I'm not a mother, and I kind of, you know, I mean, I didn't know. I didn't have these like strong urges to be a mother. I figured I might be one. And then as it turns out, I'm not. But there are definitely times in my life where if I would have become pregnant, I would have chosen an abortion. And if I've said that to some, even women or to men, they see it as something that's sad. And I feel like, well, it's not sad at all. I'm so grateful that I have the choice. What would be sad is if I was forced to have a child that I didn't want. And, you know, there was this guy on my Facebook page who was just insufferable. And he was always calling people who were pro-choice, you know, terrible names and saying that we were heinous. And he would get on his high horse. And so I knew him personally. And I presented him with this scenario. It was kind of a scenario of when I was a single woman living paycheck to paycheck in an apartment in Los Angeles where the rest of my family lived elsewhere. If I were to have become pregnant, and let's just say throw in the guy that, you know, got me pregnant, maybe just broke up with me to be with another woman or something like that, or he was abusive or something like that. I presented him with this, you know, I couldn't afford it. I lived paycheck to paycheck. What if I had to spend the last 2 or 3 months of my pregnancy in a hospital? Also, the idea that, because I know that people like to talk about adoption, which is something I want to talk to you about in a minute, but, you know, people say, well, just give it up for adoption. Well, it's not so easy to do that also, because again, a girlfriend of mine who was pregnant spent the last month of her pregnancy in bed. And I don't know what her insurance was like, but, you know, at the time we didn't have Affordable Care Act. So, you know, I mean, she might not have had insurance or whatever it was. It wouldn't have helped her, and she would have had to miss at least a month's worth of work. So I presented this scenario to this man, and he had nothing to say. I'm like, what do you say to that woman who simply cannot afford to have a child and doesn't want to be pregnant and can't afford all? He didn't have anything to say. He just kind of gave me this blank look. And then sometime later on my Facebook page, he's back to calling everybody horrible names. Mm-hmm. And so I feel that and even though he was kind of like a right winger, I do feel like, going back to the pro-choice thing, I get that there's all these people who think that it's such a sad choice. Now, when you're seeing patients, what is the tone? I mean, do you have patients that come in, do they feel sad? Are they feeling upset? Are they sad because of the abortion, or are they sad because they just have to go through this unpleasant experience?
Oh, by far they're sad because they're faced with this situation. They're faced with an undesired situation, which is, I'm pregnant and I don't want to be. Mm-hmm. Not, I'm having an abortion and that makes me sad, but right. rather, I'm having to decide whether or not to have an abortion, mm-hmm. and that makes me sad that I'm in this situation. And so that is the feeling I get by far and away. And then you add on the cultural stigma and shame, which makes them feel worse
yeah.
for having to be in that situation. So, you know, I want to speak to, if I can, just a second, you mentioned pro-choice men. And I do get a little sad when I see things like no uterus, no choice, no right. uterus, no opinion. You're a man, sit down. This is problematic. And I just want to share this with your listeners, because those who have uteruses and those who can become pregnant need the voices of those who cannot become pregnant. Men, let's just heteronormalize this, or cis normalize this. We need those voices, because it is those voices that will tell the people who are against abortion, who are able to relate to those voices. So, you know, men who are anti-choice, hearing from men who are pro-choice, those are the voices they're going to listen to. They're not going to listen to me. Mm. I'm an abortion provider. I'm a woman. I, you know, for many reasons, they can't identify with me. Mm-hmm. But if they have someone in the locker room saying, hey, that's not cool, going to locker room talk, we do need those voices. So I want to just speak to, you know, if you're not pregnant, you're not making the decision. That's more of the
right.
the sort of tone I want to express to listeners out there. The choice is not a fun one. Like, the situation is not fun, but there are people who are, you know, sad they have to have an abortion, but there are people who are super grateful and super like, oh my gosh, I am so happy that I can do this. Mm-hmm. Especially in Utah, where people actually come to me and say, I didn't think I could get an abortion here.
Wow. That's interesting. And so, are you still practicing? You're still practicing.
Yes. I don't do abortions due to state laws anymore. Mm-hmm. Because the laws have changed so dramatically, and the surgical center sort of law that says the clinic has to meet this criteria.
Oh, the travel law, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. Doesn't allow me to perform the procedure in the clinic that I work in as a generalist. The interesting thing is, the procedure for a different indication is perfectly allowed. Mm-hmm. But if the indication is an abortion, I can't do it. So people come to me, to my clinic, saying, Dr. Torres, will you provide me with an abortion? I found you on the internet and I feel comfortable and safe with you. And I have to say, I'm sorry, I can't do that in this clinic. I have to refer you elsewhere.
Hmm. And TRAP is Targeted Regulation of Abortion Providers, correct? That's what it stands
That's
for?
Correct.
And
yes.
So what they can do is say, if there is a water fountain that's in the way, or it doesn't provide enough room in the hallway, that can be one reason why you're not allowed to do an abortion. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
It's really kind of clever in a sinister way, the way they're putting together these trap laws. There's, instead of banning abortion, they're just making it really, really impossible to find someone who will do an abortion. And
it's absolutely manipulative.
Yeah, yeah.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's the key. That's the key. So we can get around the terms of Roe v. Wade just by making it impossible by the particular trap law that states that you have to be, that a clinic has to be within a certain number of miles from an emergency room or something like that. That's one of the most nefarious ones, because that actually shuts down everything unless there's a nearby hospital.
Right, but it doesn't shut down the colonoscopies that are done or
yeah,
the
exactly.
Yes.
Other surgical centers that perform every other procedure that are not within however many distance miles of a hospital.
I just I can't believe how those laws manage to maintain any sort of judicial review, because it seems to me as if it absolutely flies in the face of Roe v. Wade and that precedent set by the Supreme Court. And it just it boggles the mind that qualifies, that goes pretty much bulletproof in front of judges. But yet, if you so much as blink about maybe, say, adding taxes to bullets, the sale of bullets, that's absolutely a trespass against the Second Amendment and what the Supreme Court has had to say about the Second Amendment. So just a big disconnect there. I've always thought that maybe employing some of the same tactics being used by the pro-gun people might be beneficial in this case, because obviously the ways we're getting around the trap laws is not always working the way it ought to.
Well, absolutely.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, and this is, you see these trap laws, and this is exactly what happens when you have people creating laws, creating bills and passing laws, and even arguing for laws that are putting lives in danger because they don't know anything about healthcare, and then they ignore healthcare experts such as myself.
Yes.
I've had legislators tell me to my face, abortions aren't done with vaginal deliveries. That is not a thing. And I have had to say, oh, yes, they are. That is absolutely a thing. I'm sorry you were misinformed about how procedures in healthcare are done because you're a lawyer by training.
Yeah, I was seeing a lot of this especially after Parkland. Like, unless you own a gun, unless you have a bunch of guns and you're an expert in Second Amendment law, you can't talk about gun control. I think that's ironic, given the number of men who have never had a vagina or never had an abortion or never had a single day of education in fetal biology, that suddenly they're able to talk all kinds of as some sort of expert about preventing abortion. It's just ironic. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I want to kind of go back to your statement about saying if you don't have a uterus, you don't have a voice in this. You know, Sarah Palin doesn't believe that women should be able to have abortion. So I also don't like that for a different reason. I don't like to say that, oh, like, unless you're a woman, you have no say. Well, what about the women? There's plenty of women who say that abortion should be illegal. So I, you know,
precisely.
I'm a strong believer in, you know, I really thought long and hard. I mean, pretty much I just took it for granted. Growing up, I knew that if I got pregnant and I wanted to have an abortion, it was available to me. I took advantage of Planned Parenthood a couple of times for free birth control when I was, you know, younger and didn't have a job or didn't have health insurance. And instead of worrying about how I would afford it, Planned Parenthood was there for me. I usually had insurance and I usually had a doctor, but occasionally, you know, times are tough and that's what happens. And even though I wasn't thinking in these terms at that time, I've really thought it over and I discovered or whatever in my own mind that I feel like I don't really care what the scenario is. Like, there's all these rules. There's the 20-week ban and there's the 5-week ban, and we should ban abortions after this. And because it seems to suggest that women who are 6 or 7 months pregnant are like, you know, screw it. I don't want to be pregnant anymore. I wanted to have a child, but now I don't. Let's just get rid of it. And that's really not what happens. And I think that the decision to have an abortion should be between a doctor and the patient and nobody else. And I don't care what the reason is. If the doctor says, yes, I feel comfortable performing this abortion, then that's what we're going to do.
So does this drive you nuts, Leah, the number of people who comport themselves as being experts on these things, but they have no business whatsoever talking about fetal biology or, you know, the development of a fetus, the stages that it goes through in development, and certainly what a woman's body goes through when all of those things are occurring. Does that just drive you bananas as an expert, someone who has advanced education in all of these things?
Well, if I let it drive me bananas, I certainly would be in a different state of mind.
Good for you.
No, but you know, it's, we all have, what really, I guess, to answer your question, if I may, what drives me up the wall is the focus on the pregnancy, the focus on the fetus, embryo, baby, you can call it whatever you want, but the focus on the pregnancy and the complete disregard for the one who's pregnant. That's really what drives me crazy the most. Yeah. Because what people deny is the fact that there is a person who is having their blood pressure altered, the amount of blood in their body altered, how much oxygen they are intaking altered, their risk of blood clots and pulmonary emboli altered by a fetus, embryo, pregnancy, baby. And yet, all the focus is not on the risks that they're undergoing. It's all about what's happening with the pregnancy that they're risking their life to carry.
Right.
That's really what kind of gets my goat. And I think that we need to focus more on the pregnant person and a lot less on the fetus, because when the pregnant person is well, when the pregnant person has resources, when the pregnant person has support, when the pregnant person is not shamed for either being a single person who's pregnant or someone who has 5 kids but is in a lower socioeconomic status, someone who smokes, someone who isn't educated, someone, any of these things that we shame people for as a culture, when we get rid of that and we actually support pregnant people as human beings, I imagine there'd be fewer abortions. There'd be fewer premature babies being born. Yep. There'd be fewer homeless people. There'd be fewer women who are living paycheck to paycheck, as we, I think a lot of us have done at some point in our lives, if not currently. There'd be a lot less of that if we just supported the future that is investing in pregnant people and children. That is the big disconnect that I don't understand in our society, especially here in the United States. We treat pregnant people horribly. Mm-hmm. We tell them not to breastfeed in the workplace. You can do that at home. You should be at home, but we're not going to pay you to be at home. Mm-hmm. So you need to be jobless, not earning money to support your family, but at home breastfeeding your child. Good luck, you know, paying rent.
Yeah.
I don't understand how we can be so horrible to pregnant people and then at the same time say abortion is wrong.
Yeah, there's lots of contradictions along those lines. And you know what? I wanted to pick your brain with a few more questions in terms of what these artificial cutoffs happen to be with the Republicans passing laws where they say, well, a woman can't have an abortion after a certain milestone in the development of that fetus. For example, let me ask you this. When in the stages of fetal development does a fetus attain a functioning nervous system?
Define functioning.
Well, a nervous system that allows it to feel pain, allows it to feel physical sensations.
So the feeling of the pain. So feel is a subjective term, right? So you have to have sentience for that. But I understand your question.
Experience or whatever you want to say. Where there's that entity is feeling pain or experiencing pain.
Experiencing pain. I don't think we know really well, however, if we're to say, strictly scientifically speaking, from what we understand of the neurological development of fetuses, those neurons that are responsible for communicating painful stimuli to the brain and central nervous system are not present until at least 28 weeks. So we're talking the third trimester for those neurons to even be present. Now, that said, let's stop for a moment and say, even then, fetuses feel pain. So let's say 28 weeks, we should not be performing abortions. We should not be doing anything because the fetus feels pain. If that's the case, why are we not banning vaginal deliveries?
Exactly.
Why are we not banning vacuum-assisted operative deliveries? Why are we not banning circumcisions? Mm-hmm. Why are we not banning spinal taps in the NICU? Yeah. Why are we not banning umbilical artery IV placement? Why are we, none of these procedures use anesthesia. Someone will say, circumcisions, you use anesthesia. I've performed circumcisions. It's inadequate. That is just a disconnect in the logic. So you can't say on one hand, fetuses feel pain, abortion is bad, and on the other, but do all of these things to babies and live children that don't, that should require anesthesia, but don't.
Yeah. Which goes to the central thesis of the reason behind all of these laws. It has little to do with biology or actual abortion procedures. It has everything to do with controlling what women do with their bodies. And that's the bottom line. If you try to parse, as you have right here, the actual science, it flies in the face of everything they're saying. Because, for example, that pain-capable unborn child protection act that the Republicans have been trying to pass, that sets the onset of being able to experience pain at 20 weeks, which is completely arbitrary. So if you eliminate a scientific backing for that, well, why else would they set it at 20 weeks? Well, to control when this happens. There's no science backing any of their views along these lines. It's the same goes with the fetal heartbeat, getting that wrong too, or establishing some sort of artificial marker, some wall, so to speak, between where it's legal and illegal.
That's absolutely true. And I would argue as well, if we're really interested in safety and health, we need to use evidence-based research like we do with everything else. And we can't a la carte what information we use. There's no your research and my research. Mm-hmm. There is only the evidence-based research that the American Medical Association, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the American College of Surgeons, like all of these institutions utilize the same rigorously critiqued evidence-based research to guide medical practices. And you can't just say Joe Schmo, who published in this one journal in another country that had like five people in it, is, since it's published, it is therefore valid. That is not the way science and research work. And you can't a la carte the information that you use.
Well, likewise, I mean, where, what do you, in your best judgment, what do you think is the most effective way of preventing unwanted pregnancies?
Education, mm-hmm. Access to contraception,
right?
Especially the highly effective contraception, which tends to be less accessible because you need a healthcare provider to place it. They cost hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. And now that the Department of Health and Human Services have deemed contraception not preventative, they're not always covered by insurance anymore. Ugh. So you see in Colorado where you give IUDs and implants free of charge to people, their abortion rates go down. Mm-hmm. Why does that happen? Because their undesired pregnancy rates go down.
So it seems that ahead.
No, that is pretty straightforward.
Yes.
Cause effect.
So therefore, preventing people from having access to birth control would therefore, in a hypothetical sense, therefore would increase the number of potential abortions in that population, right? So it seems to me as if restricting access to contraception increases the rate of abortion in that whatever body of people, whatever it is, in a state or in a country or in a local municipality or whatever the terms are. So it seems to me as if it's less about preventing abortions. The entire anti-choice, anti-abortion movement, whatever you want to call it, seems more geared toward controlling how women control their bodies versus actually reducing the number of abortions. And likewise, I wanted to ask you too about this bit of a disconnect in terms of where people seem to not understand the science, which is the difference between a morning after pill that prevents implantation versus a morning after pill that prevents fertilization. Can you talk along those lines in terms of the difference between those two things and whether one's an abortifacient and while the other is not? That is a major point of confusion with people who are trying to restrict the birth control access via Obamacare. That's one of the main arguments against the morning after pill being available through Obamacare, is the difference between what's an abortion, what's considered a medically induced abortion, versus what is preventing fertilization in the first place.
Absolutely. I actually wrote a blog post called Birth Control 101 on this very topic, because there's no, I don't know, people don't want to inform themselves. It's just misinformation being perpetuated. So
yeah.
Here we go, very briefly, too long didn't read version of pregnancy, birth control, and the menstrual cycle. So you have a period. At the end of that period, you have increases in your hormones that last for about 2 weeks until you ovulate and an egg goes out. And then you have about a 24 to 48 hour of fertility window. And if you don't get pregnant, then all of those hormones decrease, and that drop in hormones makes you have another period and the cycle repeats. Okay? So egg is released about mid-cycle. The morning after pill, and to be clear, that is Plan B. That is Uloprystel, also known as Ella. These are not abortifacients. Plan B prevents ovulation. So when you take Plan B after unprotected intercourse, within preferably 3 days of unprotected intercourse, if you're in that part of your cycle where you've already released an egg, essentially Plan B is going to be ineffective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it works half the time as far as your month and where you are in the cycle. But of course, people have different timing of unplanned intercourse, so it's not 50% effective. It's more than that. That said, that is how it works. It prevents the egg from being released. But if the egg is already released, all bets are off.
Yeah.
It does not cause abortion. It does not prevent implantation. It merely prevents ovulation. And that is from centrally inhibiting the brain from telling the ovary to make an egg.
Right.
So it goes nowhere near the uterus or the lining or the whatever. Uloprystel, also known as Ella, should be taken within 5 days of unprotected intercourse in order to reduce the risk of undesired pregnancy. The mechanism of action there is not fully understood, but what we do understand is that it decreases motility of the fallopian tube, but again, it does not prevent an implanted pregnancy from continuing, so it is not an abortifacient.
Right.
The most effective morning after pill, if you will, is actually the copper IUD, which can be placed within 5 days of unprotected intercourse. That, again, an implanted embryo, an implanted pregnancy, will not be affected, because if you know how pregnancies begin, once they're embedded in the uterine lining, they're in the wall of the uterus, essentially. They're not like in the cavity where the IUD is. So that all being said, mifepristone, also known as RU486, is what is known as the abortion pill, the medication abortion. That is an abortifacient. That is something that when you take that blocks hormone receptors, specifically progesterone, progestation. It blocks progesterone receptors, which stops the pregnancy from developing. That's why it's the first medication given in a medical abortion. So RU486 is an abortifacient, is the abortion pill, is not to be confused with the morning after pill, which is a high dose of essentially birth control, which prevents ovulation.
Right. And so, and exactly. And the one thing, RU486, for example, isn't covered by Obamacare.
Oh, no.
Because it is an abortifacient. But other forms of the morning after pill that simply prevent fertilization, that is covered. And so that's one of the most frustrating things to have observed. And I can't even imagine being you, being a professional physician and watching the Supreme Court of the United States fall prey to horrendous, horrendous science. It was explained to them how those two things differ, and yet they still ruled in favor of Hobby Lobby. It's staggering. I can't even imagine. What did you think when you saw that, where the Supreme Court got that so vastly wrong, where they did say that, oh yeah, if you believe that it's an abortifacient, then it is an abortifacient. Where did you, how did you react to that when you first heard that news?
I mean, my heart died a little bit. A couple things about the Supreme Court. One, I don't understand how there's any sort of either conservative or liberal justices. They're justices of the Supreme Court. They should not have a wing that they swing to.
Yeah.
They are to be neutral. That's one thing. Another thing is, the First Amendment, the right to religious freedom, does not include the right, let's edit that out. The First Amendment does not include the right to religious oppression. We established this country under one of the aspects of escaping religious oppression. And so for people to say, it's my First Amendment right to not pay for your birth control, no, it's not. Your First Amendment right is to go home, not use birth control as much as you want, but you don't get to tell me what I have or have not covered under my medical expenses.
Right, exactly.
That would be like a Jehovah's Witness employer saying, we won't cover the life-saving blood transfusion that you needed in the hospital. We're not going to pay for that type of insurance for you. That would be totally unacceptable. Because that's a religious oppression.
Yeah, and it all goes down to oppressing women. It's always just about oppressing women.
Yeah,
and that's what's so frustrating. I wanted to ask you just a quick question. I have a couple more for you, but do you think that Roe v. Wade, the decision that allows doctors and to decide, you know, keeping it private, the privacy thing of abortion, do you think that's in danger?
I think that our freedoms are always in danger, regardless of what they are. Mm-hmm. And so I think that until we recognize that women are first-class citizens and not incubators and not human being producers, I think that until we actually treat everyone equally, all of our freedoms are in jeopardy.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. And I think that even if, you know, as we talked earlier, the trap laws and so many of these people who are anti-abortion have succeeded in removing access to abortion, which in the end is basically what their goal is. I kind of wanted to address, you've been getting some tweets lately from people about the fact that you're adopted. So I just kind of wanted you to talk about that a little, because I know that that's always a common reply when abortion is brought up. Well, you should just give your child up for adoption. And so can you talk about being adopted and your thoughts about that argument given to people who are wanting to choose abortion?
You know, I'm happy to talk about my being adopted. It's like just being a kid of two people.
Right, exactly.
So what amazes me, though, in the whole give your kid up for adoption or place your child for adoption instead of having an abortion, it's the right thing to do. As precious as these babies are, right, they're touted to be so precious and so innocent and needing of so much care and protection. And then the next sentence, but just give it away.
Yeah. You know, right.
Give it away, protect it in utero, do all of these things that are awesome, breastfeed even, and then replace that child with some other family that you don't know. That's fine. It's totally okay. It's not a thing that you can just say is easy or to be taken lightly. Not to mention the fact that placing a child for adoption requires you to continue being pregnant. Mm-hmm. And that can be traumatic if you don't want to be pregnant.
Yes.
It requires you to give birth. It requires you to subject yourself to that maternal mortality rate that we have. And so saying that adoption is an option, well, you know what? It's an option to parenting. You can place a child for adoption so that you're not parenting that child. But it's not an option for stopping a pregnancy that you don't want to have. Mm-hmm. That option is abortion, period, the end. So when I counsel patients, they have three options: continuing the pregnancy to parent, continuing the pregnancy and placing the child for adoption, or terminating the pregnancy, meaning having an abortion. That's it. Mm-hmm. And so you can't say that they're on equal footing, or that the, you know, placing a child for adoption is way better than having an abortion. Not necessarily for the one who's undergoing either of those things. I'm fortunate enough to not have been in foster system for more than 2 months. I mean, I was an infant, and when I was 2 months old, my parents took me home. So I don't know anything but my parents. Mm-hmm. In fact, my parents tried to tell me I was adopted, and I said very indignantly, I'm not a doctor, I'm Superman. And they decided that maybe it wasn't time to tell me I was adopted yet. But my parents are my parents. Like, yeah. But that's not everybody's experience. That's not every adopted child's experience. Some adopted children are desperately searching for their biological parents. Some adopted children have had horrible experiences in foster care or in their adoptive families. Like, everybody's experience is individual. And just like you can't say, you know, parent instead of placing a baby for adoption, the reverse is also true. You can't just tell somebody that that's what's best for them.
But they like to do that here. We have a country filled with people who like to tell, especially women, how they should behave. And it's just, you know, this misinformation campaign has been so successful. I've heard that, you know, like, for instance, John Oliver did a great segment not too long ago on crisis pregnancy centers, which basically lie to women and prey on their fears. And one of the things that they tell them is that either they'll never have children again, or that having an abortion leads to cancer. And none of those things are true. So do you get that when you're talking to patients? Do you get those fears?
I don't generally, because people who come to me have read my information, but it's out there. And that's actually part of why I started on Twitter in the first place. My initial endeavors on Twitter were just to post a medical fact a day. And all of a sudden I was swept up in this world of misinformation regarding abortion and reproductive health. And I was like, what is happening? So that's what kind of kicked it off, was the misinformation that's out there. So I think that more and more people are opening their minds. They're using their voices more, for sure, and seeing that it's okay to say, you know what? Abortion actually doesn't cause breast cancer. That is a lie. And to be able to do that is extremely powerful. It sounds so simple, but it is extremely powerful, much like in the equality of rights movements for LGBTQ, saying, you know what, man, that's homophobic. Don't say that around me. Mm-hmm. That is not okay. That is powerful, to say what you're saying right now is not okay.
Interesting.
Do you, when you were practicing, when you were actually performing abortions, did you ever fear for your life? Was that ever a concern, actually going to work safely every day?
I didn't actively fear, but I was always aware of that risk. And so while I didn't live in fear per se, I took measures. I didn't walk around in public wearing scrubs. I still don't. I am not without being under threat just because right. I don't go to a clinic and perform abortions every day. I am aware of the risks involved of being an abortion provider, especially one in a red state. But I generally do feel safe, but that is to say that I am aware of the risks.
I see. Yeah. Very few jobs these days come along with the idea that someone could assassinate you on your way to work. World leaders, politicians, oh, and doctors somehow. That's where we are now.
And you know, you're trained in the military for these things. You're trained as a police officer, as a, you know, public emergency response person. Med school doesn't prepare you to consider what gun safety is or what taking different routes to work look like, or making sure that your vehicle is not really identifiable so you don't have any bumper stickers or anything like that. Like that, you know, med school doesn't address those issues.
Well, I mean, I'm certainly not an abortion doctor, but I have that. I understand that just because, I mean, I wouldn't put anything on my car. Liberal bumper stickers for the same reason. I don't want to be targeted. Not that I would necessarily worry about assassination, but I would be concerned that something might happen to my car or, you know, angry drivers or whatever. The last thing I want to ask, I'm not, you know, Bob might have something else for you, but something I want to address, I'll give you my opinion and then you can give me yours and how you feel about it. But I hear people, and I had a friend who said this to me when we were discussing abortion. She is, I would imagine she's just anti-abortion. We didn't go into such great detail. But she did say how disgusted she was that women use abortion as birth control. And I feel that's really an odd thing to say because it is. It is kind of a birth control. You're controlling whether or not you're going to give birth. And it's not something, the way that it's, I guess, phrased or what they're trying to get across is like somehow you're an unsavory person for choosing abortion instead of whatever else they think. I mean, whether it's, you know, using condoms or the birth control or IUD or whatever, like, oh, you're so skanky, you're going to just use abortion as a way to not be a mother or whatever it is. But I feel like, well, that, you know, I mean, you get pregnant, you don't want to be pregnant anymore. So it is a form of birth control. But it's also something that, it's expensive and it's not easy, especially now. It's not like you can just walk up to the 7-Eleven, get an abortion in 5 minutes and be done with it. I mean, it's something that takes a while and it's not easy to do. It's not this easy. I mean, it's easy in that, you know, yes, you can go get one if it's available to you. But I mean, from my understanding, it's a long portion of your day, and some women afterwards experience bleeding and some cramping. So again, it's not pleasant. It's not fun. I hear this argument that it's so flippant that it's like a way to disparage women. Oh, you're just choosing that as a way to, as your birth control. And it's like, well, A, so what? And B, I think it's just easier to go get a condom or birth control pills than it is to have an abortion. So, I mean, what are your experiences that, would you hear that a lot? Have you heard people either online or coming to you talk about this idea?
Oh, absolutely. And I agree with you in that I don't want to give birth. So I guess in that respect, an abortion is a form of birth control, but let's look at where that stems from. That stems from the concept or the idea, and it is a false idea, but it is still perpetuated, the idea that people have sex so that they can get pregnant, so that they can go get an abortion. No one does that.
Mm-hmm, right.
No one does that. No one has sex hoping that they can get pregnant so that they can have an abortion. No one. So the idea that, you know, if you're not careful and you get pregnant, that's just what happens. That's the consequence. So getting pregnant is now a punishment for having sex.
Yeah.
And so this all comes back to female sexuality, really. It stems from the hatred of, you know, women having pleasurable sex. That's why we're sluts. Women having abortions in the case where they have had pleasurable sex but are faced with an unwanted pregnancy that they tried to avoid, but nothing in this world is perfect. And so women are condemned mm-hmm. over and over and over again for engaging in what is human natural behavior, and that is sex for pleasure. Sex is not for procreation. We are not a species that has sex for procreation. It happens sometimes, but in about 0.0001% of the time is that the case. We have sex multitudes of times more often for pleasure mm-hmm. than we do for reproducing a human being. And so to say to women, you're not allowed to, you know, engage in that natural human behavior, but men are, that's what it all boils down to. Yeah. And that is why it becomes this abortion is birth control. That's a horrible thing. And you're a horrible person if you do that. No, what you're really saying is I'm a horrible person because I had sex for pleasure and imperfection happened.
Yeah. Wow. That's a really great way to put it. It's funny because this particular person voted for Trump, and she also, the night that she met the man she married, she had sex with him. And I remember she was so upset about that, and she thought it was a slutty move, which, oh, I just love that slut thing. But, you know, she thought it was slutty, and oh, is he going to think I'm a slut, and blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, and in the end, obviously, look, they got married, they had kids, they're still together, and so obviously he wasn't judging her and thinking that she was a slut for it, but she is taking that on. And that really, it's so frustrating because I just don't see it that way. I don't understand why, as a woman, now granted, she's from a very deep red state in South Carolina, so I think that she's probably grown up with these ideas and has heard them in church and heard them from her friends. So she just, you know, is closed to the idea that something could be different. But it's so incredibly frustrating. And really, again, I just want to thank you for what you do, because I love when I'm just, you know, scrolling down my Twitter feed, seeing how you handle people who come at you with attitude and with anger. You do it in such a fantastic way because, again, you're measured and you have information and you're an expert and you just deal with them in a way that's fair and honest and sometimes with a little bit of kick-ass attitude. So I totally appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I appreciate your support and your bothering to even look at my Twitter feed. It can raise one's blood pressure at times.
Yes, it really can. Do you have any more questions, Bob?
No, I don't think so. I appreciate your bravery. Like I said before, it's when you were actually performing that procedure, it's something that could actually put your life in danger. And that's and the fact that you kept going until you legally were no longer able to, I think, is a testament to your character. So I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, and the fact that, I mean, you're still putting yourself out there, even though you're not performing those procedures. Your life is still somewhat of a you know, in danger, and you're still doing it. And I mean, people like you are so important, especially today, especially with what's happening. So before we say goodbye, I would like for you to just plug away, tell everybody where they can find you, let them know your website and all of that.
Thank you so much. My Twitter handle is at Leah N. Torres, L-E-A-H. N-T-O-R-R-E-S. And you can also find me at leahtorres.com. That is not updated frequently, but feel free to, you know, at me on Twitter or DM me. And I appreciate your time and having me on the show.
Well, thank you so much. It was awesome having you. Maybe you can come back another time.
I would love it.
Cool.
It's always a pleasure.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And we'll see you later then.
All right. Take care, you guys.
Bye-bye, Leah.
Well, that was a cool conversation. I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to talk to her.
Yeah, yeah. I could spend the next 3 hours just peppering her.
Well,
with,
we're gonna have her back.
More questions.
And,
sounds
you know,
good.
It'll be between you, me, and Steph. She's probably not even gonna have a chance to talk.
Right. Yeah. True.
All right, everybody. Real quick, you can support the show by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. And hey, we ask whatever you can afford. That would be great. $1. If you want to pledge $5 a month, you're going to get access to End Another Thing, which is the next segment coming up. And Bob and I are going to talk about really private and personal things.
Oh, so, no.
So be sure to sign up, support the show, and thanks for listening.